Good morning, members. Just to let people know the kind of a roadmap of where we're at. Apologize for getting going late. We're trying to allow the duplicating folks. Is this actually the bill already, Luke? Okay. So I unfortunately had the idea that we wouldn't be dealing with worn paper when the bill became forward. This is almost hot. What I think we'll do, members, we're just talking about, I think before we get done at 10 o'clock, we'll lay out the roadmap for next week. I think we'll wait. We'll have a little more discussion with Representative Wagenius, Representative Hilty. At this point, it's not our intention to come back tonight or tomorrow, but we're fluid on next week at this point. As happens many times, I think I told the minority the wrong day that our bill needs to be out, and maybe the public's been misled, but we have to vote the bill out next Wednesday. So it's our intention to vote the bill out next Wednesday morning. We can come back next Wednesday evening to vote on the final bill if we need to allow time for amendments. We want to try and honor the 24-hour amendment rule. So I think to allow time for staff to compile the amendment on Monday and Tuesday, it may mean coming back Wednesday night to vote on the bill. So the public, we'll see how that goes, and not sure if we're going to, how many amendments we'll actually have. This morning, this will work out good now that they do have the bill. We'll have Mr. Reinholz run through the spreadsheet, and then we'll have Ms. Taylor walk through some of the policy things, some of the ones that are the most important, maybe of changes, of incorporations, of bills we heard, or other things evolving. Representative Wagenius or Representative Hilty, I don't know, did we really reach resolution, do you think, yet on Monday, or should we think a little more about that as this evolves? Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My thought is, given some of the things that are happening, that the public will want to weigh in, and we need to have as much time for the public to weigh in as the public wants. Mm-hmm. So that would be my...
Well, Representative Wagenius, I think let's plan on coming back Monday evening then. That's what when we adjourn today, when we're done, I think we'll plan on coming back Monday evening. We'll try and find out as far as time for floor session, but maybe we'll do a thing so many minutes after floor session. Or if it's short, and we'll see if staff can find something out before 10 o'clock. So, but let's plan. I think you're right. There is a very definitely significant things in this bill that there's people of interest are going to have. It's not an across the board. It was an extremely tough target to get to. I think unprecedented. We tried to show the priorities of the state of Minnesota. I believe things like parks, state parks, the state zoo, enforcement were held to a higher standard than some of the things that we believe are less of a priority, and we're able to, we took more significant cuts to those areas. And then also areas that may look like the cuts very, very large, that those funds were maybe just a small part of their revenue stream. So I think as it evolves, it should hopefully make some sense to folks. How about at this point, questions from members? Okay, well, thank you. And Mr. Reinholz, why don't you run through the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll review the fiscal effects of the DE amendment by going through the spreadsheet. You should have the upper left-hand corner, it would be environment and energy, fiscal year 12-13 general fund by appropriation, where I'll start. Just a little information on the structure of the spreadsheet. This is the top page here is a summary by agency. This is just the general fund appropriation.
Excuse me. I'll start over a little bit. I'm going to go through the spreadsheet and review for you the fiscal effects that are in the DE1 amendment. The first page of this spreadsheet is a summary of the general fund appropriations. The general fund obviously the fund with the most changes in this bill. Just to give you a summary of where we're at as far as the target, on the very last line, if you go over to the far right column, what you'll see down there at the bottom is the target for this committee was spending of $228.067 million. That is a $65 million reduction from the current base for the environment, natural, and energy area. So then I'll just go a quick review of the agency totals and the effects, and you see the Pollution Control Agency, the DE1 amendment cuts their general fund budget by $10,930,000 for the biennium. That is, if you follow that over to the far right, a 64% reduction in their general fund dollars. The Natural Resource Department is reduced by $35.6 million. There is some shifting of funds within there. That's why there's the change number over on the far right. It says adjusted for transfers, and that's really reflects there's a 14.5% cut in the natural resources general fund budget. Conservation Corps is reduced by $455,000 over the biennium. That's a 50% cut from their base. Met Council Parks is reduced by $1.4 million. That's a 20% reduction. Bowser reduced by $4.9 million. That's 17.5%. Minnesota Zoo is reduced by $1.3. That's a 10%. Overall, in the environment total, the reductions of spending are 18.4%. Down in the energy section, which is the second section on that, the Commerce Department is reduced by 7.5%. That's $3.2 million. PUC is not changed in this DE amendment from their base funding. That would, as you see down below, what this does is this bill spends $228,066,000, which is just $1,000 under the target. If you turn the page, I'll go through some of the details by agency. This is just the general fund items in this first six pages. The first agency is the Pollution Control Agency. This is divided by what are the programs within the agency and the details at the appropriation level, it's called. That's the level that in the budget bill we make the actual appropriations. In the Waters Division, what you can see is the funded items is the water program operations is still funded at 2.756. That is the base amount for that appropriation activity. The county feedlot grant programs is funded at $3.33 million. That's a 15% reduction from their base. The other portions of the general funding that agency are eliminated in that program, the SST, the Community Technical Assistance, the Clean Water Partnership Grants, and the Governor's Initiative on Wild Rice Sulfate Toxicity Testing. In the land program at the Pollution Control Agency, the general fund appropriation for the transfer to the health department for biomonitoring that was in the base is not funded in this DE1. The Environmental Assistance Cross Media Program, the general fund appropriation for multimedia is eliminated, and the governor's initiative on moving the Environmental Quality Board is not funded in this DE1. Administrative support budget is reduced general fund by $2.432 million. That is eliminating the general fund portion of that activity. I'd move to the Natural Resources Department. The first program there is the Land and Minerals Resources Management. The total reduction for that program, you can see, is $964,000. That's a 16% reduction. The items reduced are listed there. They are the Lands and Minerals Management operations, the co-op research, and the iron ore co-op agreements are all reduced by approximately 15%. In the Ecological Services and Water Resources Program, you can see the general operations budget for Eco Resources is the first one. That is reduced by $2.7 million. That's a 35% reduction in the general fund. The invasive species activity is reduced by $700,000. That is a 17.3% reduction. That one is the same as the governor's was. Water resources management operation is reduced by $14.59 million. That's 29% reduction. The next item is indicating a shift of fee revenue and also the spending from that fee revenue out of the general fund and into the natural resources fund. That's $10 million. That was the governor's request that there's a zero fiscal effect. It's moving money from funds around. The next three items are eliminated in the budget: the Mississippi Headwaters Grant, the Leech Lake Band Grant, and the ring dikes in the base budget are not funded in the DE1. Red River Flood Damage Grants are funded at their base level of $528,000. Moving into the forest management program in the department, the first item is the general forest management operations budget. That is reduced by $8 million for the biennium, a 29% reduction. The Minnesota Forest Resource Council is reduced by 254, so it's funded at 580 each year. That's an 18% reduction. The emergency firefighting account and the open firefighting account remain at the base level. The forest program is reduced by just under 25% to $500,000 for the biennium. And the forest inventory at the University of Minnesota, that is eliminated in the budget. The next division or program in the department is Parks and Trails Management. See, the Parks and Trails Recreation Management is reduced by $4,282,000 over the biennium. That's an 11.5% reduction. The next one is just a technical change, moving money into a different fund. And then the Parks and Trails Waterways Management, those two really are the same. It's the same activities. That one's not reduced. Fish and Wildlife, the bovine health, the bovine TB initiative the governor had is not funded in the general fund budget here. The Fish and Wildlife Prairie Wetlands Program is reduced by 24% over the biennium. The Leech Lake payments and the Indian Treaty payments and the public hunting ground payments are maintained at the base level. In enforcement, the enforcement division is funded at its base level of $4.4 million over the biennium from general fund. The operations support program in the department is reduced by 41.8%. That was the governor's rec on that reduction. Moving down, that would be the DNR. The DNR took the reductions in the DNR, $35,653,000. The Minnesota Conservation Corps is recommended at funding of $300,000 in the first year, $155,000 in the second. That's a 50% reduction from their base. The Met Council Parks is recommended at $5,712,000, which is a 20% reduction in their base. Moving into the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the first group of appropriations funded are the cost share programs, and you can see the weed management was cut by 25%, the vegetative buffers by 25%, cost share work by 25%, feedlots were cut by 25, and then the Natural Resources Block Grant, which is the administrative dollars out to the local agencies, is cut by 15%. In the Resource Planning and Delivery Program, the floodplain management, typically referred to as the Area 2 program, is fully funded at base level. The Minnesota River Joint Powers Board is eliminated from funding. The Red River Basin Board is funded at the full $84,000 in each year. And the Soil and Water Conservation District Services Grant is reduced by 15%, which is a $956,000 reduction. In the Resource Protection Rules and Laws program, cost share work is reduced by 15%. The Drainage Assessment Team is reduced by 14%. Natural Resources Block Grant, this portion of the one that was up in the Land and Waters, is also reduced by 15%. Funding for the WACA violations and the DNR violations is eliminated. It's a reduction of $200,000 in the biennium for each of those. The Bowser oversight monitoring for the WCA is reduced by 15%, and also the Bowser admin is reduced by 15%. So there's a reduction in the agency of $4,896,000 over the biennium. The Minnesota Zoo, the next agency you see, is funded at $11,214,000 for the biennium. That is a 10% reduction from their base level amount. Now we move into the energy portion of the bill. That's a different article in the bill. The Commerce Department is reduced by 7.5%. Those reductions come in the Administrative Services Division, a 15% reduction. And in the Market Assurance Division, also a 15% reduction in that activity. The Public Utilities Commission is funded at the base level. The last section of the spreadsheet there is titled Revenues, Transfers, and Adjustments, indicates some transfers that were made. The first one, a DNR water fee, was moved out of the general fund, and the revenue is moved into the Natural Resources Fund. That was a recommendation, a request from the agency and the governor that the DE1 amendment does have in it. The next item is the DNR Forest Campground fee to the Natural Resources Fund. That was also a governor's amendment that is incorporated into this DE1. Commerce assessments. This bill contains a transfer from the assigned risk account. $15 million is directed to be transferred out of that account to the general fund during the biennium. And the SR, the special revenue account, transfers to the general fund. There also is language in the bill that directs transfer of $3 million over the biennium of balances from various accounts to the general fund. Mr. Chairman, members, that is a summary of the general fund activities. We then can move on to the next page moves on to a spreadsheet that's titled Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Finance Agency Detail. This spreadsheet incorporates those general fund changes, but also indicates changes to any of the other funds in the agencies under this committee. And there are not a lot of changes to non-general funds, so I'll just go through and highlight. Most of them are technical changes, but I'll move through beginning with the PCA. If you look at line 28, PCA has made some changes. That's the wastewater certification and exam. That's a statutory account where there were some changes in the operation, and it's going to indicate they're going to have an additional $27,000 worth of revenue in each of those years. The AIR program, if you recall, down on line 52, it shows AIR program increase, 166 in the first year, 335 in the second. If you recall the testimony from the agency, this is environmental fund increases that the federal law virtually requires that we continue at an inflationary level on increasing those appropriations. Then you move on to the next page 2 in the land programs. at the department, the non-general fund changes show up on page on line 79. There was a governor's recommended reduction in the funding for the VIC reduction. That's the voluntary program. The activity is down. That's indicating a change in appropriations due to that activity dropping. The petrol remediation program, this line 80, this is a, if you recall, that program was sunsetting at the end of fiscal 12. The DE1 has language that continues that program of, I believe, for another 5 years. It's a set period of time. Line 82 is really a technical change that there's language in there that allows the department to provide services on a voluntary basis and receive the in charge permit applicant for that service. The environmental assistance and cross media program is the next portion of the agency. The only change there, non-general change, is on line 112. It's the technical change, and the e-waste program was established with permanently, but the funding was not. When it was established, it was unclear how much funding that would bring in. Now that it has some history, we're indicating the amount of funds expected to be brought in on that program. Move on to page 3. This is the multimedia program. Oh, that's the summary of the multimedia program first that I was just listing. In the administrative support, the only change was general fund. We already covered that. The bottom of that is just the summaries for the agency, so I really could move on to page 4 and move into the DNR. If you look on page 4 in the land and minerals area, there's just the general fund changes recommended in the DE1. In moving into the eco and resources management area at the end of the program and on to page 5. In this area, there are some changes, non-general fund changes. If you look on line 236, the governor had a recommendation for some recreational water level spending. That was natural resources fund spending, managing the level of recreational waters. That was recommended in the DE1 to be funded. Line 237 is a reduction in the base funding for the ATV from the ATV account to the Ecological Services Division. And number 238, now that's part of the transfer of the water fund fees and spending into the natural resource count and out of the general fund. It's really, it balances out to zero. If you go to the forest management program, that would be the next portion of the spreadsheet. The only non-general fund change in the DE1 is on line 279. That's the management increase from the state forest account. What that's $202 million in each year is approved for increased spending. That account contains the revenue that the forestry program makes on the sale of their timbers. Certain parts of the revenue go into that account and then it need to be direct appropriated out. Their revenue estimate is up, so they requested for an increase in that, and that is contained in the DE1 account. Moving on to parks and trails management. On line 321 is some non-general fund changes. This budget recommends ATV funding increase of $800,000 over the biennium. That was a governor's request that is in here. The local trail grant with the lottery and lieu money is increased by $100,000. That money is statutorily divided in percentages. There's additional money there, and that department asked for that, and that is appropriated. The snowmobile fund had money available to increase the appropriations for the snowmobile trail activity by the $400,000. If you look on 325, the state parks dedicated account is increased in the natural resources fund by $1.5 million over the biennium. That account is similar to the forestry one. The revenue from the state parks goes into that account. The revenue is up over previously forecasted amounts, and therefore the appropriation can be increased to give back for the operations of the parks, the revenue. The lottery in lieu on 326, that's similar to the on the trail grant lottery in lieu. This is the portion that operates the state parks and state trails. Revenue is up, so it's appropriating slightly more money than the base. The next item is on line 332 in the Natural Resources Fund. Income from the State Forest Campgrounds is appropriated to the Parks and Trails. So once again, that's income that comes in and then is appropriated back to the division. That would be that program. Moving on to the next page, Fish and Wildlife Management. The general fund changes we've gone over, so the 372, I mentioned this was a big request by the governor to increase hunting and fishing licenses. That is not contained in the DE1 that's before the committee. The 373 is a dedicated account shift. What this is doing, you also see that same title on line 377. The governor requested, the department requested that the revenue and the appropriations from the dedicated game and fish accounts, that's usually referred to as the stamp and surcharge accounts, be changed from a direct appropriation to a statutory appropriation, and the DE1 does accept that request and make that change. 374, though, those accounts are not bringing in as much money as previously forecasted. There's a $528,000 in each year reduction in the money available there or appropriated because the money is not available. Line 375 is a game and fish appropriation of $600,000 to purchase some land in a WMA where some land was lost due to an easement on some road building, and this is using the money that came out of that easement to repurchase some land. The department asked for that, and that is in the DE1. The next division would be the enforcement program in DNR. The only non-general fund item funded is on 453. That is peace officer training account appropriation. Funds come in from surcharge on citations to the state. A portion of that is by law appropriated for DNR conservation officer training. There's language in the bill that appropriates that money to the DNR. The operations support program at the DNR has a general fund reduction. We already talked about that, but on page 9, what you'll see is there was a request from the department and the governor to increase the Natural Resources Fund. That's 490. That is not recommended in the DE1. The rest of that page is summary of the agency's funding. And move on to page 10. Page 10 is a summary of the Met Council Parks. On line 556 is the general fund. We already talked about that. That shows the general fund change. The Minnesota Conservation Corps, what that has is on line 575 shows the general fund change I mentioned. 577 shows that the natural resource funding for the Conservation Corps is not, the base is not continued in the DE1 amendment. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, I believe they're all general fund changes. So on page 10 and then on to page 11, already talked about all those changes in the general fund summary. Moving on to the zoo, line 725 is the it shows the operating fund increase that the zoo is expecting, and that's a statutory appropriation. It's just information, really. What that represents is the increased revenue to the zoo that is then statutorily appropriated back to them, and their estimate of what that is up. That then, moving on to page 12, and what you see on page 12, frankly, are revenue transfer changes and adjustments. Most of those are pretty much been covered when I talked about the funding side, so I don't think we need to, and the general fund ones I did mention, I don't think I need to go over those unless someone has questions. Next page is just a lot of summary data that you probably don't need. I'd need to keep on there so we can fill in the bill and basically certify to Ways and Means how much money we spent. 14 is the same. Could move into page 15, and 15 is the Commerce Department. The only non-general fund item that shows up here, I believe, is on line 1108 and 1110. Those indicate the increase of petrol fund dollars that are coming in by extending the petrol fund program. The rest of the changes on there are all general fund changes that I mentioned when I went over the general fund spreadsheet. So line for page 16 is the rest of the Commerce Department. There are really no changes there other than the general fund ones I mentioned. Moving on to page 17, continues in Commerce Department. Down to the bottom is the PUC, and the only item in PUC that I'll mention on line 1240. The governor recommended an increase in funding of $1.5 million. That would have been paid for by assessments back to the regulated industries. The DE1 does not contain that recommended increase. Line 18, just as, or page 18 becomes summary pages. Actually, Mr. Chair, members, that is the financial changes that are contained in the articles of DE1, with the exception of the LCCMR is on a separate spreadsheet, and we will get to that, I think, later after we go through the language on the DE1.
Thank you. Question? Ms. Taylor, do you want to go through the bill language and hit what we think are the high spots or low spots, depending on how you're looking at them? Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not going to go through Article 1, which is the Environment Natural Resources Finance article. This basically implements the spreadsheet that Mr. Reinholz just went through and also includes riders that we typically carry each biennium. And then Article 2, the same, I'm going to skip over that, would implement the spreadsheet for the energy and commerce portions. So I'm going to start on page 22, which is Article 3, and this is the statutory and language changes. Section 1 is just establishing a statutory appropriation for the forest campground fees that you saw on the spreadsheet. Section 2 is a peace officer training account that would be established and provide a statutory appropriation for the DNR, also in the spreadsheet. Section 3 is one of those surcharge license statutory appropriations that would be established that was mentioned in the spreadsheet. Section 4 is the stamp and licenses statutory appropriations that would be established, also mentioned in the spreadsheet. And then if you want to skip ahead to page 26, section 5, this would establish a water management account for the water permit fees that currently go to the general fund and then are reappropriated to the DNR. This would establish the account, and then it would still require a direct appropriation to the DNR for these, but it's basically a shift from the general fund to the natural resources fund. And section 6 and I believe section 7 are also on that same issue. Moving ahead to page 29, sections 8, and these are the e-waste changes that were mentioned in the spreadsheet. And section 9 also. Section 10 would be, is the extension of the petrol fund program, continuing on to page 33. Section 11, if you remember when we were going through the spreadsheet, there's a provision that will allow the agency to charge back for the costs of assessing financial assurance. This is the language that would implement that. Section 12, if you remember, we had testimony on the school trust lands issue. This change would remove the requirement that the DNR manage the school trust lands with sound natural resource conservation and management principles and basically focus on the maximizing the long-term revenue. Section 13 is the peace officer training account, another cross-reference for that statutory appropriation. On page 36, section 14, this is some language regarding the wild rice water quality standards issues that we've been hearing about. This requires some rulemaking in addition to some rulemaking that's already going ahead and would require the agency to work with an advisory group in establishing new standards and criteria for the waters that would be subject to the standard. And then section 15 would, instead of the 10 milligrams per liter that currently is in statute for wild or rule for wild rice waters, it would establish a 250 milligrams per liter standard until the new rules go into effect. Section 16 on 37 is a repealer, and this repeals a number of definitions related to native prairie. And then Article 4 is the LCCMR bill that we dealt with last night, and it basically reflects what the committee did last night with a few exceptions, and I'll go over those. There was a few technical changes necessary to clean up some language in the Minnesota Land Trust appropriations, just to add a cross-reference to that new subdivision that we added via amendment last night. If you remember, we did the committee accepted a 20% reduction in the administrative cost of the LCCMR. Since there was some money on the bottom line, a provision for $200,000 to the DNR to accelerate land exchanges and land sales in counties that have 50% or more public land was added, and you'll see that. And then the aquatic invasive species in that emerging issues subdivision, there's some amounts changes to adjust for the balance after that was taken into account. And then the repeal of the trust fund language that would require the trust fund expenditures not to supplant traditional sources of funding, that has been removed from this.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholtz and Ms. Taylor. Just in the review, members, and to the audience, there is one mistake. I was not clear to Mr. Reinholtz. Line 577, the Natural Resources Fund reduction, it relates to Minnesota Conservation Corps and some work they do with the DNR and some work orders. That $490,000 a year was not supposed to be part of this amendment. So that will not be in the proposal. We'll do a subsequent amendment or whatever. So that was not that was a mistake on my part. And then, members, if I could just touch on a couple of the things. Ms. Taylor did mention that the part of, I believe, was the A6 amendment last night. Again, that was the repealer that dealt with some supplanting language. It was a mistake on my part. It was my understanding that language was new. Representative Wagenius, during discussion last night, made a point to say that it was not new language, that it had been around for a while. So that is not part of this. That was part of a bigger amendment that Representative Hackbart offered last night, dealt with a number of different things, but that's not included in here. Another one that I, policy issue I think that we need to mention is the wild rice sulfate issue. We are funding that issue similar to the governor, $1.5 million. We have $1 million in the LCCMR budget. There's $500,000 proposed from the Clean Water legacy money, so it's the same. But unfortunately, the federal government, the EPA, is not taking this issue as serious as we'd like to. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the Native American community, and business interests have been working and doing tremendous work together to work on this issue. They've collaborated, come together on a really, really tough issue that's got all kinds of implications. On one side, you could talk about the financial implications for wastewater treatment plants and business and all that stuff. It's really huge, depending on what that level ends up being at. The other side of it, something that can't be measured in money, is the importance to the Native American community and wild rice. Representative Dill talked a little bit about how it's so different in northern Minnesota. We can't underestimate the importance of this to the Native American people and their heritage. Unfortunately, I don't think the folks in Washington get it, or Chicago, or wherever the EPA is. There is no federal standard. There is no other state standards. We are adopting a standard that is the drinking water standard, and until EPA gets going on the deal, that's where we're at. It's going to be controversial. It's serious. And so that's hopefully we're going to get some action now out of EPA. I talked with Commissioner Austin yesterday. He's aware that this was going to be in the bill, and he has done a great job of working on the issue with Ms. Flood. I think at this point, I think we want to allow the members to see some of the issues they see as important, and then let everybody digest it, and then we'll look at the time. Members, there are more St. Patrick's Day cookies and donuts, if that helps you feel better, that's there, and there's coffee for everybody. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and yes, indeed, happy St. Patrick's Day, all of you. Some of you might not have some green on there. I'm looking across. I've got my my fence pinchers, so maybe I'll catch up to you later. Well, Mr. Chair, members, you've perhaps realized what I might be speaking about in this. I do have a couple questions on this this wild rice sections here. Going back, and where I'd like to start, if I could, in section 14, what I'm endeavoring to do initially, and perhaps we'll need some assistance from staff on this as well. But on line 37.11, talking about until the rule amendment described in paragraph D is complete and any permit issued for the discharge of wastewater, Commissioner of Pollution Control Agency may only require the permit to monitor sulfate concentrations and discharges. And it goes on to talk about a few other things there. Now, my question initially is, does that include permits that are issued at this time, or is that in reference to permits that will be in the future? That's my initial question.
Representative Purcell, the intention was that it would cover existing permits. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, and I wasn't involved in the discussions that led to this, so I'm not exactly sure what the intent, but it does have an immediate effective date, and I would assume that just any permit issued after the effective date of this act, then that's when it would apply.
I'm sorry, say that one more time, Mr. Chair.
Any new permit or any change to an existing permit.
So, Mr. Chair, the permits that were issued prior to the effective date would not be covered under this sulfate initiative in 37.11.
Mr. Chair and members, it reads any permit issued, so I would, it'd be for any new permits or change, amendments to those permits.
Representative Purcell and Ms. Taylor, thank you. It was the intention that it would cover existing permits and requirements of them going forward. There's some examples. Depending on where you're in the permitting process, you'll be required to be treated differently than other people. And the intention is to put people on an even footing. So I'm not sure if what Ms. Taylor says is what is in here. This will continue to be a work in progress. It's my hope by the time we actually vote on this by next Tuesday or Wednesday that we'll have more resolution, more direction from the EPA, the MPCA on this issue. At this time, this is where we're at on the issue. Representative Purcell.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I, if it's in order, is an oral amendment in order at this time?
We're not even okay. Haven't even moved the bill. So, but we'll get a clarification on what. I understand that's a concern of yours. So let's find out specifically more information so that we know when we come back on Monday what actually it does say and what the intentions were and we'll keep it evolving. But at this point, why don't we let that evolve? Follow up, Representative Purcell.
Well, I would propose at the right time an amendment if that's the case. And if that is the case, then that you intended that existing permits and future permits would be covered under this language that begins on 37.11 and goes down to 37.19. That would seem to me that the language then down in Section 15 where you are proposing a 250 milligram per liter sulfate standard would not be necessary. And I say that totally in an effort to avoid what I believe is I think you're with the language in Section 15, this 250 standard, and there's no science to support that. It's a taste and odor standard for drinking water. Nobody has any information. I can tell you there is some information that if you put 250 sulfate into a bed of wild rice, you're probably going to kill it or damage it. That's what we know from preliminary science that's been going on by the tribes for a couple of years. And that Governor Dayton has proposed weeks ago, as you alluded to study this thing, and everybody's looking for the outcome in the best possible way with the activities, PolyMed, etc. But I'm very concerned, and I'm going to choose my words very carefully, Mr. Chair, because I really don't think that that those who propose this understand the gravity of the situation and that you're picking a fight. And I don't think it's a fight you want to pick. You're talking about going after the feds. There's a treaty here. You're going to not only have the EPA here, you're going to have the Department of Interior, Bureau of Indian Affairs. You're going to have Department of Justice. And this is potentially making things worse. And from the tribe's perspective, it'd be like somebody taking a Bible in the middle of this room and stomping on it. Would that make you mad? That's what this is doing, this 250 standard. So I think there's a way to avoid that. We know that the tribes and the state and the entities that have proposed these projects are working together. They're working together. The MPCA has already initiated this. Already initiated this process, and this is really, you're throwing a wrench in the gears. You got a big combine that's working pretty hard. Those of you and I looking across, those of you that know ag, you got a big combine working pretty hard, and you just got a wrench right in the middle of that thing. And I'm telling you, I have the Leech Lake Indian Reservation in my district. I think I know from whence I speak. So I think this potentially more damage, I think there's a way to avoid it. As I read up here in 37.11, you have some prescription there for sulfate and the protection of wild rice beds. And then to throw in a 250, you're just slapping 60,000 people right in the face.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my question is on Section 14 and 15 and 16 and just on process. And I know we were here late last night, and we voted on things for possible inclusion in a bill. Were these parts that are included in this bill, were they introduced as bills? Did we hear? I know I was gone a couple days for excused absences, but did we hear these as bills? Were they introduced as bills, and were they heard in front of this committee for possible inclusion? Where did they come from? Was it legislation that a member signed and introduced and had a hearing request and was heard in front of this committee?
Representative Hansen, the conversation this committee's had about wild rice is centered around the wild rice sulfate study. We have heard that issue in this committee, and this is work along those lines. That's what this is about. And so that's where it's at.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. So the standard, the Section 15, that wasn't a bill. That's as a result of some of the discussion from the governor's budget presentation about wild rice issue being a priority, and then this was drafted as a result of kind of that discussion, or it wasn't a bill on Section 15?
I think this is, Representative Purcell used the analogy of the combine being stuck, and it's probably a good analogy. The combine stuck in the mud, and we've hooked a chain to the combine, and we're going to give it a big jerk here, and we don't know if it's going to come out of the mud, it's going to roll backwards, or what it's going to do. But the combine stuck in the mud, and we got to finish picking the crops, and we're all going to work together to find a way to do it, and what we're trying to do. And I certainly respect where Representative Purcell is coming from. I understand that. We did not hear Representative Rukavina's bill. He has a bill somewhat similar. We did not hear that. This is an explanation of why there's an important need for that $1.5 million, and we're trying to move this issue forward. MPCA has been working really hard on it. Unfortunately, it's been told every day it's evolving. We're looking for it to move forward, and unfortunately, it's been stuck for 6 or 7 days when we've been getting promises and promises. And so this is an effort to move the issue. I certainly respect Representative Purcell's words. They're important. I can't accentuate enough how this is really, really important issues for a lot of people, and we have to be really careful going forward here as we try and do what's right. Yeah, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then Representative 16, the repealer there, was there a that doesn't appear to be to the wild rice issue. Did we have a bill on that, repealing those sections, or where did that come from?
Representative Hansen, it's if I remember right, Representative Wagenius, it's the repeal of the language about natives and 25 miles and best practice efforts. That issue's been heard quite a bit. It's consistent with an amendment that's in the current Lessard-Sams bill. That's what it is. I don't think it's an issue that very many people here are not familiar with. We did not hear about the issue again. We certainly can take testimony if you want. I've got a number of folks that would love to testify about it, and I can imagine what they would have to say. I've worked closely with Representative Wagenius over the last week. We've agreed to disagree, but she actually cooperated with me. I really respect her opinion on this. Actually, I think we are pretty well in agreement on the science about this. Unfortunately, it's not known enough of it, and it's not laid out in a good plan. And so we're interested in moving this issue forward, but current situation is unworkable, and it's not fair. And unfortunately, there's implications. Some of them may not be so good out on the environment of moving plants around and all that. So I don't know, Representative Wagenius, if you want to add to that. This is one why, if the public wants to come in and testify about this, we can hear over the next few days. This one could take a while if we want to dive into it. And I think it's more a long-term thing that hopefully next year we can get some resolution on it. Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just asking on the process if these issues were introduced as bills so the public could hear them, and that hearing requests are put in and discussed. And it sounds like, you know, they've been discussed elsewhere, but they're the author's prerogative. Author is the chair. to put things into the bill. And so that's where they've come from. I think it's important to go back to the beginning of the conversation about timing in the next few days, you know, to make sure that there is time for anybody who wants to come and testify on these now that this is out. And I assume it's on the web page for the committee so that people can see what the bill is and what's happening there. So I think timing is important, particularly for components that are included that were not introduced as bills and were not heard completely in front of the committee.
Well, thank you, Representative Hansen. And I guess I would defer to other folks that have been here longer than I, but we've unveiled this bill at arguably about 10 to 9 on a, is today Thursday? Thursday. We're actually going to vote on the bill next Wednesday evening, 6.5 days from now. I'm not sure. I don't know for positive, but I guess I would defer to somebody else. Have we ever had that amount of time to review an environment omnibus bill in the public with the little bit of policy change that's in this one compared to some of the other ones? I guess I would let people answer that to however it actually works. I don't know the answer, but I feel fairly comfortable that one thing we've been is open up front. There's a couple things in here that you could say we really haven't heard discussion about them in this committee. Well, we got 6.5 days to hear. Mr. Representative Chair, Hansen.
I was actually complimenting you on the discussion that we had.
Well, earlier. Good. I'm glad. Thank
so
you.
So that we have time, you know, to have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because if these parts hadn't been out in the committee, we've got time with the weekend now, and I would encourage a lot of people in the audience, you know, that it's their responsibility if they have concerns with these things to come forward now. So I was actually complimenting you.
Well, thank you. And Representative Hansen, your point, I mean, these are unbelievably huge changes, and that's why I think the importance, and thank you for recognizing that. There's significant heartburn with people sitting in the audience right now about potential impacts. Representative Canute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciated Representative Purcell's comments about the wild rice and how important it is for his constituents and I think for all Minnesotans. And I guess I have some questions both about the repealer and the wild rice quality standard. On the repealer, maybe it would be helpful for members for us to be able to see that language, and I guess I could go get it, but I would ask if staff would maybe make a handout with what we would be repealing there. I think that would help us better understand what we're doing and would make for a better discussion of it. Because I do think the science looking at where things are planted and where the seed stocks come from is an important area, especially, you know, as we heard from Dr. Frelick last night that, you know, we're looking at, this is prairies, but we're looking at 50 or 60 years until the boreal forest is no longer in Minnesota. And you know, I think native prairie, making sure it's healthy and resilient because there's not a whole lot of it left would be very important. And so I think that's something to discuss. And, you know, this committee interacts a lot with science, and I'm curious on the wild rice quality standard. Wild rice is such an important part of this state. I think our state is very unique this way. It's culturally extremely important to different groups of Minnesotans. You know, it's when I visit other places in the country and world, it's what I bring as a gift from our state because I think it is such a unique and special part of our state. And to be putting a standard in statute with, from what I understand, no scientific backing, that's a really concerning way to go about addressing this very important issue. And I would think, because of the importance of wild rice, we would be interested in being a little more protective and being cautious about putting a standard into statute until one is determined through rule and using good science. And so I do think legislators deciding a standard is not necessarily the best way to do it. I think there is a huge role for science and for thoughtful thinking and experimenting and testing, and not necessarily decisions that are meant to be made across this table. And so I'm curious if there's other examples where the legislature has set a standard for any amount of time. And I know this would not be forever. It sounds like you're trying to push some sort of action, but pushing action by putting a standard that isn't science-based and could really hurt, I think, an icon of a really important part of our state, leaves me very concerned. And so I'm just curious if there's other instances where the legislature has just set a standard in statute without going through the rulemaking process.
I'm not sure, Representative Knute. We had a lot of suggestions in the rulemaking in the Mississippi River critical area. We laid out a whole lot of parameters in the rulemaking there about what should be included or not included. It's the only one I can think of. But Representative Wagenius probably knows better the answer to your question. And she's next on, unless you had additional questions, Representative Knute. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three things I want to talk with us about, and the first is the wild rice. We know that we have a standard now. We know that we have to have, or we want to do, a new scientific understanding of how wild rice grows and how it survives. We know that that's going to take about 2.5 years. We had that testimony last night. Then there has to be a rulemaking. So what I see here is not pushing EPA. EPA cannot move until there is, the science is done, or new science is done, because we do have an old scientific standard. What I see here and what I observe is this is an attempt to negotiate a standard in statute, and that is simply wrong. It's wrong, and it shows a profound lack of respect for our Native American community. That's on wild rice. We've heard the budget numbers, but what we haven't heard from you and what I was hoping to hear today was what is the outcome from the reductions, what your intention was for agency, what Minnesotans were going to lose by these reductions, and we haven't heard that from you, and so I guess we wait then until Monday or Tuesday and hear from the agencies about the actual outcomes from these reductions. So it's hard for us to comment just on raw numbers without your saying or the agency saying what's going to happen. But the third thing I'd like to observe is just as I have gone through the spreadsheet, or we've gone through the spreadsheet this morning, I look at where some of the cuts are, particularly in waters for feedlots, and I look at septic system cuts, and as I look at it, I see, let me back up and say that I, Representative Torkelson and you and I sit on the Legacy Committee, and I think we're the only ones here that do sit on that and are looking at the new proposal for clean water. And what I see is that bill then is going to be used to backfill the cuts that are made here. So I think that is a discussion we have to have. And it's a hard one to have because folks haven't seen that bill, but there are many places where it appears to me that that money is being used to backfill. So I'm hoping we can figure out Let me take it back. And that's not what Minnesotans intended when they voted for the constitutional amendment. They intended for the new clean water money to be used to accelerate activities that were already going on. And I think we are now in a situation where that money is going to be used to backfill. So with that, Mr. Chair, I look forward to seeing the outcomes from the I don't look forward to it. I take that back too. This is a fairly stressful time. I think we need to talk about the outcomes.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking back at the spreadsheet and the over 64% cut in general fund to the Pollution Control Agency. And I was looking at some of the lines on page 2, administrative support operations, multimedia operations, looks like water program operations, technical assistance. So I'm assuming that that's a lot of people. And we're proposing, the majority's proposal, is adding new responsibilities with the wild rice. So I'll be interested to hear from the agency, and I realize there's probably not time today, and they've just seen it as well, but how cutting 64% of the general fund can keep the agency doing what it's doing. How do we protect the environment? How do we control pollution? The name of the agency, the Pollution Control Agency, how do we control pollution if we're going to be cutting 64% of the general fund and looks like 2.4 million from the base budget and administrative operations? That's a lot of people. So if people aren't there, who's going to do the pollution control? So the agency, that would be very important, and to hear from them. And then following up on Representative Wagenius's comment here last night when we were here late, we heard about money from LCCMR for bovine TB and chronic wasting disease or wildlife health. And it appears that that base money is being cut here in the general fund. So even though you've dropped the repeal of the supplanting, it appears that we are supplanting with the lottery dollars here of cutting the general fund and replacing it with lottery dollars. So maybe the agencies can give us some detail on that next week when they come forward.
Well, Representative Hansen, you make a good point. I would refer members and the public to line 167, page 3. That's the total agency budget. Is Mr. Kudelka or somebody from MPCA here? If you could come up to the table. And if you could just let us know what line 167 says of your total budget and what our proposal is and what kind of a reduction in your total budget are we proposing. Rather than me read the line, I want to be sure I'm on the right line. I'd rather have Mr. Kudelka let us know. I know, and Mr. Kudelka, I know you've only seen this for less than an hour or so, but if you could let us know the interpretation of your total funding. There's significant, Representative Hansen said significant general fund funding, but what is the total funding of your agency under base, governor's proposal, and our proposal?
Chair and committee members, my name's Kirk Kudelka, legislative director from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'm sorry, again, I missed the page number that you wanted me to
Mr. Kudelka, it's page 3 of the spreadsheet, and I believe your agency total is line 167.
The spreadsheet does note a change in our overall budget from the base of forecast here from February 2011 from $299 million to, under the governor's request, to $316 million for the biennium, and the House of $303
million. And Mr. Kadalka, you may have been over on the base of 14 and 15.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The base of
310, sorry, for fiscal year 12-13. I apologize.
Okay. So, Mr. Kadalka, if I got this right, the base forecast for Pollution Control Agency is $310,600,000. Governor requested an increase of about $16 million, which would be approximately a 5.3% increase. If I did that right, did I do this? I'm sorry, $6 million, approximately a 2% increase. We recommended a $7.3 million decrease, which is a little bit more than a 2% decrease. I would suggest that members, when they go home this weekend, have a chat with their neighbors and ask them what they think of the Pollution Control Agency in the state of Minnesota getting a 2% decrease in the economy we're in. And when we come back, we'll be able to have discussion and hear about that. Further comment? Representative Tanuk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have one question about the PCA and then a question about the commerce budget. So on the front, we've got a 64.2% decrease, and that's in general fund monies. Is that correct? And so I'm just... Yeah, there's a lot of numbers here, and I think we're all a little tired, and Mr. Reinholz knows these budgets better than anyone, I'm sure. And so I'm trying to reconcile that 64.2% minus 64.2% change, and then the 2% reduction, and you know, we're shifting money around, it sounds like, quite a bit, and so I'm trying to figure out where those big shifts are. What are the big pots that we should be looking at to understand that more clearly?
Representative Knut, you make a good point that in the Pollution Control Agency, their general fund budget is an extremely small percentage of their total budget. And we kind of showed that when there was significant general fund cuts to Pollution Control Agency, the net effect for the agency is a 2% cut in their total funding. Mr. Reynolds, do we have actual percentages for MPCA? Like, general funding is what percentage of their, as far as a percentage? We have the dollars, and I think Mr. Kadalka just talked about their total budget, and you can see what the general fund is, and so you could interpolate your own percentage as from that. Representative Knut, or do you want Mr. Reinholz?
Well, Mr. Chair, that was helpful. You're right. If it's a small percentage of the overall budget, a big cut of it doesn't make the overall budget as big of a cut. But maybe if Mr. Reinholz could, and I know this was in budget overviews, but I don't have these all memorized, of where the big chunks of general fund money are in the PCA budget. Are they throughout the different program areas, or are they kind of concentrated in certain program areas, just so we have a better sense of that?
Representative Knut, I would go to the page 2, to the top of page 2. Mr. Reinholz ran through where these general fund items are, and that shows you which ones we reduced. One program, you can see through them all which ones we reduced, which ones the governor proposed to reduce, and where it's at. Their general fund funding under the base budget was about $17 million. The governor proposed basically $17 million, and we're proposing $6 million in general fund. I think that, and there are more detail. There is more detail available if you want that, if I'm not mistaken, from the agency especially.
Yeah. So Mr. Chair, just thank you for kind of walking me through this. It looks like most of the general fund reductions is coming in the clean water area. That's 50% from base reduction. And so that's helpful. I'm kind of remembering that water is the area of the PCA budget that has the biggest chunk of general fund money, and so I think when you're looking at a 64% cut, it makes sense that it's going to hit the clean water programs the most. But the other question I had, and maybe it'd be helpful just to delve in a little more, is in the Commerce Department budget and the PUC, and I sat on energy for the last 4 years, and we had the Commerce Department budget, so I've gone through it a number of times, but from what I remember, a lot of the Commerce Department actually brings in more general fund money than it spends. And so I'm, with these changes that we have, if we could get a little bit more explanation about what those programs are and if they will have any impact on the general fund beyond the cut to the program, but kind of the ramifications of that, just because I know that the Commerce Department spends less general fund money than their impact. I mean, they bring in more general fund money than they spend, and so I just am curious, those two programs, if we could get a little more explanation of what they do.
Representative Knute, I will bring to one item. It's not a general fund item. It's the Mr. Reynolds, if I'm not mistaken, the one area that the PUC, and it wasn't actually the Commerce Department, but PUC had asked for 10 new employees, and we believe that they've got excess staff in the telecommunication area currently that they should be cross-training instead of just hiring these new people without looking at the opportunity to cross-train. So even though that didn't have a general fund impact, we felt it was important for PUC to look at that opportunity of cross-training some individuals that are currently have excess personnel in the telecommunications area and use them in this other department. And so that's one initiative we have that we think that PUC should talk about. In regards to commerce, I think we've got some administrative reductions there we've asked for, but for the most part, where, as you said, they're mostly a revenue in, revenue out, you know, collecting fees, as you talked about. Mr. Reynolds, something to add to that?
Mr. Chairman, no, I believe you are correct. I mean, the only thing I would add is I do not have any estimates that it reduces revenue, and I believe the cuts that were made, if you look on page 5, the cuts that were made to commerce of the first spreadsheet, page 5, you'll see it was only in the administrative services section, 15%. The governor had recommended changes, reductions in that area also, although the House recs are larger. In the market assurance portion, 2 out of the 3 items there were governor's recommendations to reduce, and the House just accepted those recommendations. And the third one, market assurance, the governor did recommend cuts to the 312. The House increased that cut, but I do not believe that's any cut in revenues from those reductions there. All the other portions, that's why the other portions of the Commerce Department were not recommended for cuts, because most of those are pure assessments back to the industries they regulate, and there would not have, it is difficult if not impossible to have savings to the general fund.
Representative Dill. Thank you, Mr. Reynolds.
Well, thank you, Dill. Chair McNamara. I think that every single person in the audience and every person at this table, and frankly many in the state, appreciate the gravity of the situation that we're in and why the philosophy of this spreadsheet is what it is, and why that of the governor's is what his is. Every one of us has kind of a pet things that we worry about and stew about. Representative McGinnis is water. It's one of her number one things, in prairie grass management. And, you know, one of the things that would be in northern Minnesota is forestry. And I think that we're really on a collision course no matter what direction we go, regardless of whether it's wild rice or mining or tourism. We're just on a collision course here for something serious. I don't know what the outcome may be. But when I look at the cuts in forestry, when a lot of our state's industry is driven by the outcomes of our management of the woods, and I look at the incredible changes in a program that really the management of the program, talking about the Sustainable Forest Initiative Act, those parameters haven't changed, but the state is taking the funding away from a program that there are contracts out there for already in existence, makes us even questionable as to why any company would want to do business with us. I look at the incredible amount of state land that we have across the state, but particularly in the northern tier of the state, particularly in the boreal forest, and pilt is going away in a big way. I don't serve on the tax committee now, but because that's general fund, pilt is going away. I think to avoid the train wreck, somebody needs to put some cards on the table that does something really innovative with the management of the forest and other things in the state. And frankly, as the forestry chair in the past, I had some ideas, and they weren't embraced by the department. They weren't embraced by the committees. And so I look forward in all these areas. Wild rice is one of them, to come up with something innovative and unique. And I'm afraid in the wild rice area that this thing could drag on forever. I think you and I share that thing, same idea. But I just, I'm not really going to comment on any one set of numbers or anything like that, but I see December 31st written all over everybody's face here.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Representative Dill, I'm hopeful that you and I have been working with some of the forestry folks. The unfortunate reality, the production per forest from our state foresters is completely different than the private sector, the counties, the feds. I'm hopeful that prior to this bill passing next Wednesday, we can at least in a pilot way, a pilot program somewhere, see if we can put some innovation and capture the ingenuity of not only the state foresters, some of our retiring and maybe looking for other employment, but the private sector foresters and learn from the production of other foresters that are out there, and maybe there's some innovation we can do, because we need to be sure that timber that's available and ready to be cut and planned to be cut is not held up because of a lack of boots on the ground. Members, Representative Dill, follow up.
I hope that no one took what I said was, I was trying to be constructive. May not have sounded that way. I wasn't really being critical of anyone, except that I will be critical, is that we keep doing the same thing over and over and over. It feels to me as if, and it's time for the people in the audience and the state and the members of this committee and the legislature and the governor to come up with a new mousetrap, because we just can't meet our goals doing what we're doing and with the resources that we have. And I encourage anybody with an idea, whether it be on clean water or wild rice or forestry or state parks or whatever it is, come forward, let's do it, figure it out.
Thank you, Representative Dill. Point well made. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Dill. Just one anecdote to that, Mr. Chair. Was talking to an individual who is a private forester, and there is enough mature black walnut in Frontenac State Park cut at a rate of 1 to 2 stems per acre to pay for the operations of the park for 5 years.
On that note, members, we are going to come back on Monday. Representative Wagenius, we're going to see if it's possible that we can come back before floor session, see if there's an opportunity in the early afternoon, potentially. That may not work, and if it won't work, members, we'll come back at 4:30. It's my understanding, approximately 4:30, it's my understanding that floor session on Monday is proposed to just be an hour long. So, Representative Wagenius, you'd rather prefer to just plan on 4:30 on Monday? Members, we're adjourned until 4:30 Monday.